Voyage Guide to the Galaxy podcast. The official podcast of GalacticVoyage.com. We talk about Star Wars.
Fanboy style.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
Welcome to Fanboy's Guide to the Galaxy, episode 19. We're almost to the 20 mark. And this week we'll be talking about supply lines. And our panel this week is, well, me, I'm Ryan Zasso, and then my co-host,
Eric Bobbs.
And then we've got two special guests. We got Mark Newbold from Lightsaber.
Hey there.
And then we got Aaron from JediDirectory.com.
Hey guys, how you doing today?
Doing pretty good.
So the episode of Supply Lines, and to be honest, I didn't get to watch this much, and because yesterday I was at a convention, and so were you, Mark, right? You were at
Starmania. Absolutely was, yeah.
Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, Starmania, it was great. Oh, before I start, just to correct something, I'm actually now from JediNews.co.uk. I used to be with Lightsaber, but back last month, Lightsaber and Jedi News actually merged, so even though for the last sort of 10, 11 years I've referred to myself as Mark Lightsaber, it's now actually Mark from Jedi News, so even I've got to get my head around that one. Yeah, I was at Starmania, which is in Wales, in Swansea in Wales, and yeah, it was a good day. There were some good guests there. Richard Parmentier was there, Chris Monkey from episode 4 was there, who else was there? Kenny Baker was there, Dave Prowse. Yeah, there was a good bunch of people there. Derek Lyons was there. And yeah, we had a good day. Everybody was enjoying the event. Some good trading there as well. And yeah, it was good fun. We chatted to a few people. And yeah, it was good fun. Good day.
Right, right. And you mentioned the site merger between Lightsaber and Jedi News. So how long has this been planned?
Well, me and James have been friends for quite a few years. Just to explain briefly, Lightsaber's been going since 99. We were running other sites before then, but that were sort of general sci-fi, bit of Trek, a bit of Star Wars, bit of this, that, and the other. But in 98, we did a site called Wirezone, and that pretty quickly turned into Lightsaber in 99. I've known James since about 2006, and James has been doing other things with other sites, UK-based sites, for pretty much the same amount of time. What Jedi News does is primarily collecting news, and what Lightsaber did was mainly, you may know, it was interviews and a lot of fan fiction and general news coverage, so the two sites didn't really overlap. So after we'd sort of got to our 10-year anniversary, we wanted to freshen the site up, sat down with James, and had a chat just asking his advice, and James basically says, look, why don't we just merge, make one big UK site, he can carry on doing what he does on his side of Jedi News, I can do what I did at Lightsaber, effectively do it for Jedi News, so we'll both be in charge of our own parts of the site. And of course Adam, that also launched Jedi News, now lives in Canada, so he runs Jedi News Canada, so we've got quite a team of people now that kind of don't step on each other's toes, but are all working towards the same end goal, which is to hopefully make the best UK site. So it's exciting times.
Cool. And when can we expect this mega site to be completed?
This mega site, that's a good way of putting it. The two sites officially merged on August the 12th, but you won't actually see anything of that, other than if you go to Jedi News now, you'll see a little logo saying incorporating Lightsaber. But for all practical purposes, the new site, which will be a brand new, visually new, physically new site, which will still be called Jedi News, that launches on May the 4th. So between now and then, I'm doing a few little podcasts here and there, working a lot in the background, sort of getting a lot, 10 years worth of Lightsaber content across to the new Jedi News site. And then gradually over time, we're going to roll that out so we're not just bombarding people with a 10-year chunk of stuff, because it'd just be too much for people to take on board, really. We did 150 interviews. There's 200-plus short stories and piles of artwork and content, radio shows and such. So we want to sort of dribble that out over the next year or so, just not to overwhelm people. But yeah, May the 4th, 2011, that's the date for the diary.
Awesome.
You mentioned on other podcasts. What yeah. other podcasts are you on?
Yeah, we were on Dark Empire Radio back, when was that? That was about 3 weeks ago, which was a lot of fun. Joe's a great guy, so we had good fun with that. We did the Sarlacc Pit, which is Galactic Binders podcast. And last week we were on Star Wars Book Report with Jesse. which was a lot of fun. That was specifically about the book collecting aspect of the Star Wars universe. But we kind of went off on tangents and it looped into different areas of the saga and that. So that was a lot of fun. And of course today we're with you guys and we've got a couple of other ones coming up over the next few weeks. So it's a bit of a tour if that makes any kind of sense. We're sort of getting out there and spreading the word and letting people know what we're all about, so because obviously people in the UK would know us better than guys, you guys out in the States. So we want everybody to know what we're all about.
Cool. All right, now let's move into the main discussion, which is the episode Supply Lines. And what were you guys' initial thoughts when you heard about a Jar Jar episode? Let's start with you, Eric.
All right. Well, my initial thoughts were I wasn't excited because I don't really like the slapstick episodes as much as I do the serious one, but this one is actually a lot better than I thought it was. There wasn't too much Jar Jar. There was a lot of politics. That was pretty cool. And then,
right.
Yeah,
and to be honest, I actually kind of like Jar Jar in this episode. I think he really works well with the animated form when he's played by Ahmed Best, not the other guy. That's just torture.
Right. I think Jar Jar worked really well in this episode, and he actually served a proper purpose for a change. Because obviously, this episode, I'm sure you'll speak about it later, is a prequel to the Ryloth trilogy. So it kind of with season three, they're going back and looping back into stories that we've seen in seasons one and two, which is I think that's a great idea because we know the Clone Wars is 3 years, so they could pretty quickly run out of time. To tell the stories. But yeah, Jar Jar, I'm sure we'll talk about it later, but Jar Jar has one particular sequence in this film when he's standing on a table doing some slapstick stuff that actually came out being really cool, I thought. So yeah, I think he serves a good purpose in this.
It was the first time I laughed at Jar Jar in years.
Yeah, for me, when I first heard about Jar Jar going to be in this episode, I was a little bit nervous about it just because I'm not a huge Jar Jar fan. But overall, I think, he actually added a lot to the episode. And I know we're going to talk about, the details of it later, but, it didn't bother me at all to have him in there.
Right.
I think this episode was a prequel to Ambush.
Right.
The first episode of season one.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
He mentions the meeting with the Jedi.
Right.
And that turns out to be Yoda.
Right.
And then, plus, I had been looking forward to seeing Master Dai, who is the Nikto Jedi. And I thought he was just as cool as I thought he was in his picture when they released it at Comic-Con. But let's talk about him some. I thought he was a great character. I kind of brought back what a Jedi really was, and that he would sacrifice his life for the lives of innocents. So, I thought
he certainly lived up to his name, didn't he? Die. He certainly did what it said on the tin. But he had gravity about him. He was definitely a leader, but he wasn't in anybody's face. I watched the episode earlier today because obviously I only got back from Wales yesterday, so it's kind of fresh. But I did write down that there was one scene when he was talking about Cham. Cham Syndulla, and he noted and said that he knew that Cham was angry and felt betrayed, and I thought it was such a great line. I wrote it down when Master Dai says he counted on Republic assistance and it didn't come. War turns promises into hopes, and I wish it wasn't so. And I just thought, what a great line, because even in the midst of all the mayhem that was going on, and it really was Rourke's Drift, they were right up against it, he still got the sense of mind to think in those terms. And yeah, it was a really good character. I hope we do get some more earlier episodes where we get the chance to see him again.
Yeah, ever since they showed those pictures of just kind of those preview pictures at Comic-Con, and I saw that they were going to have a Nikto Jedi in there, I thought that was a great idea, and I was looking forward to it, and it didn't disappoint at all. I think he was a great character, and I was sad to see him go. Probably had a bit more of a emotional response, to his death than I did even to 99. I know that, that was a big deal for the last couple episodes, but, I felt a little bit more of a emotional attachment to this character, just because, you know, I'm a huge fan of the Jedi, and I always like to see new Jedi, you know, brought into the show, and I thought he was a really cool addition.
What was the cookie cutter for this episode? The not the cookie cutter, but you know, the thing at the beginning, the fortune cookie. You know, the little.
Oh, the
actually, I know a lot of people were having issues with the HD feed from Cartoon Network, and so I actually missed what the fortune cookie was, but I think I saw it on the episode guide on StarWars.com. I think it's where there's a will, there's a way. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, I think it was that. Yeah. Yeah.
I would have to say that's definitely one of the more unoriginal cookie, you know, fortune cookies that they've had yet, you know, because that's kind of a common, you know, term that you hear. But, you know, I guess it fits the episode.
It fit. Yeah.
Right. And speaking of all the technical problems with this, you know, did anyone else get, like, that echo in the background with the audio?
Yeah, I got that. I got that when I watched it.
Yeah, I think the HD feed from Cartoon Network, at least where I was watching on the East Coast, we missed the whole first half of the episode in HD. We had to switch over to just the standard def. So I didn't notice the audio issues as much, but the picture itself for HD was completely unwatchable for at least the first half. So
yeah, I managed to see it.
The picture was fine, but the audio was terrible.
Yeah, I was lucky. I managed to see a copy somebody sent over from the States, and my copy was pretty good, so I've got no complaints.
That's good.
But it kind of took me out of the experience a little bit with the bad audio quality. So,
right.
Sometimes I couldn't understand what they were saying because it was just overlapping so much. But, you know, let's talk about Jar Jar a little bit. I mean, he I think we've already established that he had some good moments in this episode. And like I said, he really belongs in the animated form, and I like that they are not, you know, laying it on heavy with the Jar Jar gags in this. I thought it was like one or two, you know, gags, but for the most part, it wasn't too bad.
Well, it's easy with a character like Jar Jar. Sorry to jump in there. He's such a slapstick character that I think he people were irritated by him in the trilogy, you know, in the prequel trilogy, and they could have gone even further with him being a slapstick character. I think season one, when they did, was it Gungan General? You know, that whole episode, you know, and I still think, I can't remember laughing so much when that magnet flattened the ship and it was Jar Jar's fault. That whole sequence was just priceless, and I think that kind of sold him as an animated character. I think the battle droids are the same thing. The battle droids are tons better in the animated show than they ever were in the films. I think they were quite annoying in the films, but in the animated show, they're actually quite likeable, and Jar Jar's kind of become the same. So I think they could get quite a bit of mileage out of him if they use him judiciously and don't throw him in all the time. If you just dip him in here and there, I think it does work.
Yeah, I agree with that. The thing about Jar Jar is he's got kind of a bad rap because of the prequels, and a lot of people just pretty much hated him in the prequels. And I know when I first saw the prequels, I wasn't a huge fan myself. But, you know, now with the Clone Wars coming out, you have the much younger audience that they're targeting it toward, and Jar Jar just makes sense to be in the show.
Yeah.
As much as some of the, you know, more, you know, older fans don't necessarily appreciate, you know, his humor or wonder why they're continuing to show him, you know, it makes sense for him to be there. You know, in this episode specifically, when he first came on screen and when they were walking down that hallway and he was kind of, you know, yelling out for, you know, looking for people, and it was kind of that annoying way. I was automatically annoyed by it. As soon as he came on, I was like, oh, come on, really? They're going to start with that. But like you were talking about with the whole table scene when he was doing the dishes and that thing, I was cracking up. I thought it was hilarious. I thought it worked. And by the end of the episode, I completely bought into, you know, Jar Jar being, you know, a good part of this series.
Exactly.
I think
the
funniest part about that part, though, was when he was, like, the noises he was making.
I
don't know what he was doing, but it was weird.
Did you hear the commentary, the video commentary that Filoni does for this episode?
I never got a chance to.
I have not.
Not
yes,
yet.
It's pretty funny because he actually mentions how Jar Jar, you know, he may in this scene, he's not necessarily as dumb as he's coming across. It's almost like he's playing up the fact that people think he's dumb.
Yeah.
And so it's part of his, you know, intelligence actually that he's taking advantage of these people because they don't think that he's much of a threat. So I had never looked at it from that perspective. So hearing it from Dave Filoni, it was like, oh, okay, I can see that. You know, he's just playing this up. It's not necessarily that he is just, you know, so mindless, but he's just kind of playing it up, you know, trying
they'd never
to trick
allow
these guys.
Yeah, exactly. They'd never allow him to be a senator. I mean, it's obviously such a hugely important position. They wouldn't let him be a senator if he hadn't got some savvy, you know,
right.
And if he's that much of a klutz, it makes a mockery of pretty much everything, really. So, yeah, that does make a lot of sense, really, yeah.
Yep. And he's not as hated. See, the funny thing about Jar Jar is it's almost like he's got, you know, he's got his haters, but then he's got a pretty big fan base, too. There's a lot of people, especially if you follow different people on Twitter, people jump to his defense right away. You know, there's people out there that love Jar Jar, you know, and funny story, actually. I have a guy that you don't run across this too often, but I ran across a guy that I used to work with, and he was in his 40s, and he had never seen a Star Wars film, not any of them.
Oh, you found the one guy alive that's not seen Star Wars.
Yeah, and he was in his 40s, so he had no excuse. You know, he was alive back, you know, when it was big. So, but yeah, he had never seen one of the films. So I actually let him borrow my DVDs. He watched them in order, like 1 through 6,
yeah.
And he loved Jar Jar. He thought he was hilarious. He actually went out and bought a Jar Jar action figure and put it on his desk at work. And so, you know. Us that kind of, you know, we've been fans of Star Wars forever, you know, maybe we were a bit jaded, you know, when Jar Jar came out, but, you know, somebody with a fresh perspective on it really appreciated him, so that kind of, that changed my view of Jar Jar a bit.
Well, cool. Let's talk about Chomps and Doula some. I think that what's good about doing these prequel episodes is that we get to see familiar characters, and we see Chomps and Doula actually working with the Republic, so it's interesting that Chomps and Doula is. Do you think that this is the reason why Chomps and Doula is kind of lost faith in the Republic by the time that Liberty on Ryloth comes about?
Yeah, that would make sense. That would make sense. I mean, I'd like to go back and watch the original Ryloth trilogy again to sort of really refresh my memory on it. But I think the great opportunity that Filoni's giving his own team by doing these well. Prequel episodes, really. I mean, it's like last week, you know, the two Clone Trooper episodes, you know, one was a prequel, one was a sequel to Rookie, so, you know, they've used a clever opportunity there, and they're doing the same thing here, prequel to Ambush and prequel to the Ryloth trilogy. Gives you that different perspective on characters that you've kind of prejudged. I mean, it's another good thing is that the fact that we've gone to Ryloth, you've seen Twi'lek. I think historically in Star Wars, you look at Twi'lek and you always think Bib Fortuna, bad guy. You know, Twi'leks generally, you don't think of them in a particularly affirmative light, maybe Ula, but not many others, really. They tend to be more negative. And same with Nyctos, you know, it's good to see Master Dai as a positive, because he's kind of blocked them all in the same mindset. But yeah, certainly to see Cham, it gives you an insight into his thought processes as to why he's become a bit more jaded about the Republic as opposed to how he was in this episode when he's still working alongside them.
Yeah, I was actually a bit confused watching the episode because I couldn't tell where it was supposed to fall on the timeline, and so I wasn't sure if it was supposed to be prequel or if it was supposed to be, you know, kind of more current. So I didn't notice that until after I had gone back and read the episode guide. I saw that they had said it was a prequel even to Ambush, which so this comes before even the very first aired episode of Clone Wars. So I was a bit confused about that, but. You know, I think it does make sense that he's a bit untrusting, maybe, of the Republic, and so it was kind of cool to be able to see how that came about. But just on the note of them doing all these prequels, I wonder if later on in the season, hopefully not too far down the line, they'll start to show, you know, these in more of a sequential order, just so it's easier to follow. Because I know for me personally. With them doing these episodes all jumping around, it gets a bit confusing. So I can only imagine you know, a younger child that's into the show kind of being very confused about, you know, what's going on, like, you know, like just not being able to follow when things are happening and that type of thing.
It's a bit like the original Star Trek, though, isn't it? You know, years later they tried to work out a chronology based on those old star dates, when back then, you know, the star dates didn't actually mean anything, because what the studio wanted was to be able to show the episodes in any old order. You know, show a season one, then a season three, and a season one, and a season two, and it didn't really matter. Whereas as opposed to this, where, you know, Star Wars, we want to see things sequentially. We're now seeing the Clone Wars. So, but I think from a story point of view, maybe it's a great opportunity to be able to go back. So I totally get your point. Especially from a kid's point of view, that is going to be confusing. But, and also when you know, you just want to sit there. It's like watching Pulp Fiction in the right order, isn't it? You know, does it work? Does it not? Do you watch episodes 4, 5, and 6, or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, or however? But I think from a practical point of view, it's given them the opportunity to fill in some cool little story gaps. And they've already said, you know, this show is going to run until they get bored of doing it, or the audience gets bored. So we could be sitting here on season 7 of The Clone Wars when we know that really it's a 3-year conflict between episodes 2 and 3. Still watching Clone Wars episodes, I just hope they don't fill every gap of every waking day, because that could be a bit much.
Right, yeah. And that would be cool if they did some flashback stuff, you know, even to the point of going and we could see, like, maybe somebody like Qui-Gon or something like that in animated form.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how awesome would that be?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've not thought of that. That would be amazing if they did that. It really would be amazing. Or Darth Maul. I mean, I know we're going to see his brother. But, you know, to see Maul, for example, you know, just real sort of throwback. I know they've got to be practical about it, because they have to, you know, it costs them thousands of dollars to make the models, you know, the CG models and new locations. They've got to be clever about how they spend their budget, so that they're not unlimited in what they can do. But by the same token, yeah, wow, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, to see Qui-Gon would be really something special.
Yeah, I'm crossing my fingers for that, because I'm a huge Qui-Gon fan.
If they
ever showed him in this show, that would just be, it would probably be my favorite episode before it even aired.
Yeah, not that we want to prejudge things, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
As long as his nose isn't as big as it is in the Gindi series.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so Eric, you're back on. What points do you have that you want to bring up?
Well, I thought it was kind of weird how the Trade Federation claimed that they had nothing to do with the droids, with supporting the Separatists. So I thought that was pretty weird. How, I don't know. There were a lot of things that I liked about it, a lot of things I didn't like about it, but it was a pretty good episode.
Now that's something that's always confused me. Is the Neo-Moidians, are they on the Republic side? Because aren't they in the Senate, or are they on the Separatist side?
Well, I think this is another case of Palpatine playing all sides against the middle, isn't it? He's controlling the Federation, the Trade Federation, through the Neo-Moidians. He's also controlling the Republic by being Chancellor Palpatine, and he's controlling the Separatists by being Darth Sidious, rather. You could look at it from any angle that you want, really. I think I think this was a good episode in terms of having Bail Organa, who's again a really, they should have used him more in the film because he's a great character, showing his political savvy, as opposed to, and it played up Lot Dodd as being a, it was Lot Dodd, wasn't it? Yeah, as being a savvy political character as well. I like the politics in this one, but I quite like the politics in Star Wars anyway, so I know it's not the most exciting things in terms of action. You're not going to get a pod race in the middle of a political argument, but I think it played well. So yeah, then be all trying to be cute, and it was all in front of the king as well, wasn't it, in front of Katoonko, trying to sway his emotions, because he's quite a, you know, he feels for the plight of the Twi'leks, but he's also got his neutrality to think of, and all of his council, you know, and he's, you know, when he comes out after Bail and Jar Jar when they're walking away and basically says, I want to help you, so I'll do this, but I can't do anything else, you know, he's giving him that little crack in the wall that they can go for. So I think it worked really well, actually.
And in the episode guide, they mention that Lot Dodd mentions something called a Separatist Senate,
yes,
which I guess hasn't been seen yet. So they apparently, according to the episode guide, it's a civilian political arm of the Confederacy, and they said that it will play an important role in future episodes. So that should be interesting to see how that, you know, how that all fleshes out.
yeah, the opposite side of the Republic politics. I mean, because we've never really seen the Separatists, you know, full on making political decisions or anything like that. It's always just been Count Dooku says to do this, Count Dooku says to do that, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, we've only ever seen like the military side of things, and we've never seen a government body. So it's I guess I've never even thought about that, you know, what that would look like. So it'll be interesting to see that played out throughout the season.
It makes sense, though, doesn't it? You know, you look at I'd not thought of it either until this episode, and I picked up on that as well. You know, episode 4 when they disband the Senate because they've got the Death Star and they can just put the willies up everybody with the threat of blowing the planet up. But at this point, right, they haven't got that, you know, they haven't got that capability to do it. They're still building the Death Star, or just starting it anyway. So I guess, yeah, it makes sense that they would have to have some kind of power base. I'd love to know where it is as well, because it's obviously not on Coruscant. So I'd love to know where their capital is. That'll be an interesting thing to see later on.
True, yeah.
All right, Eric, did you have any other points? Because I'm ready to start discussing what we saw what we're going to be seeing in the next episode.
Yeah, I'm ready for that, too. I only saw this episode once, so I haven't really studied it very much. So,
As far as the visuals in the episode, a couple of things that I thought were cool is the Toydarian species that they showed. They had a lot of different models, which I thought was cool, to see the different models that they created. I don't know if those were reused from Ambush. I only remember seeing a few different in Ambush, but it seemed like there was a number this time that we hadn't seen before. And just kind of the unique characteristics of their faces. They didn't all look exactly the same. You know, they had very unique looks. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I spotted that, yeah.
Right.
And then Toydaria also...
Toydaria looked a lot different than it did in Ambush, though, I think.
They looked better. They looked like they put a lot more detail into it.
In Ambush, it was more like there was a lot of like spongy looking growth in the episode, but in this one, there wasn't really any of that on the planet.
Well, this is because that was a moon off Toydaria, I believe, wasn't it?
Oh,
in Ambush, I believe it was. Yeah, good spot. Yeah, not thought of that.
And I also noticed that the Toydarian minister sounded a lot different than he did in Ambush.
You mean the king?
Yeah, the king.
Yeah, I thought there was a little difference, but that might just be because of the echo on my TV. I'm not sure though. I mean, maybe they used a different voice actor, or maybe, you know, maybe they just decided we're going to go a little bit more this way than what we did before.
Yeah, maybe he had a cold. He might have had a cold.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't notice a difference in the voice. I'm not sure. I guess you could always go back and look to see, that, you know, who voiced him the first time. That Brian George voiced him this time. So I don't know if it's the same person that did it before.
I think that was the same person.
Okay.
So, you guys think about clone Captain Keeley?
Very cool.
Very cool.
Got shot twice and he kept fighting.
Yes, I love the two things I love about Star Wars, you know, mostly is the Jedi and the clones. And I know that's pretty, you know, that's not very unique or whatever, but I just always have loved seeing the Jedi and the clones in action. So the end of this episode when Keeley and Master Dai just kind of like, you know, two guys taking on this whole army and they both went down, it just that part to me was awesome. Some of the moves that Dai did with where he swings his lightsaber out and it pushed, you know, it was almost like a force push with the lightsaber.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool. I don't think we had seen, you know, that before really. So I love the clone captain.
And
hats off. Sorry, I'm jumping in. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say very quickly, hats off to Dee Bradley Baker for making all those clones sound so unique from each other. You know, he hasn't just put the same voice on for all the clones. You know, he really gives each one a character. So we've got to say hats off to him for that.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dee Bradley Baker is the man.
Hence your Skype picture.
Yes. Yeah. He is in my Skype picture, isn't he? I was fortunate enough to meet him down at C5, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And another thing I noticed in the episode, you know, before we move on, is the Nemoidians just the look of the Nemoidians, I felt like it was almost, they looked better in Clone Wars than they did in the prequels. Just
right.
The mouth movements and the facial expressions, just, you know, it made them like real, like a very real looking alien, whereas in the prequels they were almost puppet like. So I really liked that. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, a lot better than just wearing like a Halloween mask.
Right.
So I thought that they handled, you know, Master Dai and the captain's death really well. I think it really didn't disappoint in terms of, you know, how awesome is this Jedi, and then, you know, he had a pretty cool death, I would say.
Yeah, he definitely had a cool death. It was sad to see him go so quickly. But yeah, he definitely had a cool death, and he went out, you know, he went out with a bang.
Right, yeah.
And it was bittersweet as well, because he could see those supply ships coming in. He knew that he'd held them long enough to do his bit, you know, and he'd helped the Twi'leks, and, you know, that was, if you're going to go, that's a pretty cool way to go.
Right.
And they showed it as well. They actually showed him getting shot, which I was kind of surprised by. You know, we were all shocked in season one when we'd see, you know, Ventress running somebody through with a saber and go, wow, this is a kid show. This is quite tough, you know. But now we're kind of getting used to it. We realize it's not just a kid show. You know, they didn't flinch away from showing the fact that he died. So that was good as well, really.
Yeah. I think this show is really, you know, passing into the mainstream audience and not just kids anymore. Like they like, you know, more how it was in season one where it was, you know, directly, you know, towards kids. I think that it's starting to be more accepted, I think. But, you know, I think we're done with supply lines, so, you know, let's talk about next week, which I'm greatly looking forward to. You know, Baron Papanoidia.
Oh man,
he's gonna be awesome. Even from the trailer, you can see, you know, you can definitely tell that looks almost exactly like George Lucas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was a cool trailer, and I mean, they'd hinted at it. I can't remember whether it was at C5. I'm sure it must have been, you know, when they showed the clip with him kicking the table over and starting the fight in the bar, you know.
Right.
Just to think of Papanoida being the kind of guy that would get into that situation, you just wouldn't think it. And yet, here we are, all excited, ready for it to kick off next week, and yeah, very, very much looking forward to that.
Greedo's going to be awesome. He's going to be in it. So I think that's another aspect that's really going to tie into the original Star Wars.
I was surprised by that, though, when they said it actually was, because on the version I'd got, there was a trailer at the end over the credits, so, you know, and they said, yes, Greedo, and they pointed to him and put his name up on the screen. I always got the impression, and maybe I'm just wrong with my facts, but I always got the impression that Greedo was supposed to be reasonably young, you know. He was a bit, well, I was going to say green beyond the ears, but that's obviously pretty obvious, isn't it? He was not the most experienced bounty hunter in the world, you know, because obviously he was a bit of a chump when Solo took him out, but that's a whole other argument, who shot first. But again, yeah, just to see Greedo in there will be fantastic. I mean, obviously, he should have been in episode one. I think Warwick was going to play him, and Warwick Davis, and they cut it out and decided not to make it Greedo. But, you know, yeah, let's bring him on. Let's see what he does.
Absolutely. What do you think, Aaron?
It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. I know there's some existing backstory for Greedo that I believe may conflict with his appearance in the Clone Wars, but I know that that hasn't stopped him before. So I think, you know, this might do a little bit of EU crushing, but other than that, I mean, it would be really cool to see him in there. Baron Papanoida, I think that'll be cool. I know when you see George Lucas's cameo in episode 3 as Baron Papanoida, it's, you don't think of him as like an action kind of guy,
right?
So when you see him doing these, you know, he's kicking over tables and he's dual wielding and, you know, weapons and stuff, it's kind of funny to see, almost. It's a little bit comical. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what his backstory is. See, like, is he some kind of undercover agent or, you know, something like that? And I thought it was funny the scene they showed in the preview where you actually have, you know, George Lucas on the screen with a knife up to Greedo's neck. You know, I thought that was pretty cool. So yeah,
well, we don't know. In real life, George Lucas might be able to do backflips, handstands. You know, we don't know. We just don't know, do we? So
that's true. We don't. We have no idea. So it'll be cool. It'll be cool to see him on there, and I hope they got him to voice him. I don't know if he would do the voice, but that would be cool to have George Lucas's voice in Clone Wars too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe George Lucas was the stunt double for Sidious during the Yoda versus Sidious Senate duel.
Oh yeah, I'd like to know that one.
But it's going to be a great episode, and you know, I'm greatly looking forward to it. Probably more than any of the episodes we've seen so far. It's going to be awesome.
And I think just to come back to something he said earlier about hopping backwards and forwards in the timeline, whereas last season was Rise of the Bounty Hunters, this season's tagline is Secrets Revealed. So
right.
I suppose they can justify themselves by saying, well, we're going to go back and tell you something about Ambush or Rookies or the Ryloth trilogy that we couldn't really tell you at the time, partly because they hadn't written it, but mainly because they didn't want to let too much of the cat out of the bag. But now we know so much more than we did then. They can slowly divulge these little bits of information that I mentioned it on a podcast I was on last week, where apparently there's a twist coming in this season. And bear in mind, they're already halfway through doing the audio for season four already, so they're miles ahead plot wise. But there's a twist coming this season that people are just going to absolutely freak out about, and two, no one's going to see it coming, and people are just going to flock to the show to see it because this plot twist is just so massive but so clever. So you know, there's some apparently some brilliant things coming up. So yeah, I think we're all they've got their audience now. You know, we're all hooked. We wouldn't be here talking about it otherwise, would be. So they've definitely got us.
Yeah, they have a lot left to pack into this season. I think, you know, with what we saw at C5, with, you know, a lot, you know, we have Dathomir coming up, and we have Darth Maul's brother, and we have the clone commandos. And so, you know, we have all these things that we haven't seen yet, and you know, I think there's going to be, this season's going to just be, it's going to blow us away, I have a feeling, because you know, there's only 22 episodes, so they got to pack it all into that, and you know, it's going to be very interesting and very fun to see how this season plays out.
Yeah,
right. And you know, that's an interesting perspective, Mark, when you look at it from, you know, the secrets that are being revealed are some of the secrets that took place in the early episodes of Clone Wars. I think that's pretty interesting when you think about it. I mean, it definitely gives a lot of explanation for, you know, why they're going back and, you know, doing this. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think at the time, you know, they could have, I'm sure they had their plot. I mean, they, you know, I know they all go down to the ranch and sit there for a weekend and just plot, you know. I remember when they were plotting out the new Jedi Order, and apparently all the authors got together at the ranch and sort of sat there for 4 or 5 days and had a summit, pretty much, and Lucas came in and had a little chat with them and threw out some ideas and said, no, you can't kill Luke, but yes, you can kill Chewie, and all these different things. So I know that they do these meetings, and they've probably got reams and reams and reams of yellow legal notepaper full of ideas. But yeah, you know, it'd be boring if they did 10 episodes based on Ryloth all at once. So that, you know, the opportunity to hop backwards and forwards is well, it's going to be liberating for them, and also I suppose from a practical point of view, you know, they're not going to recreate the wheel every time they go back and do a new episode. You know, they've got a lot of the characters already designed, you know, they've got the planets designed, so it's probably from a purely budgetary point of view, it's probably useful as well. So that's just me thinking like a business person.
All right, well, you guys have anything else to say?
No, I think as far as the things that I wanted to talk about, I think we covered everything pretty good.
Right. Okay. Mark, do you have anything else to say?
regarding this episode, yeah, really like the political intrigue in it. And I did like seeing, because I think Bail Organa is one of those characters. We've known about Bail Organa since the novel came out in sort of, well, 76. I mean, the novel came out before the film. So, you know, we've known of Bail for a long time. It's only now, in the last sort of 2 or 3 years with the film, and, well, really since episode 3, that as a character he's really started to develop, and it was really fantastic to see him in this episode. Okay, he kind of got outthought. It was only because the King Katunko came along and gave him the olive branch, and that's my phone ringing, gave him the olive branch of the option to get the supply fed through, that bailed him out of the situation. But yeah, the chance to see bail him out, what am I saying, in that that was not intended, sorry, that wasn't fun, should have used that one, you know, to get him out of that to get him out of that situation was that was cool to see, and just to see Lot Dodd clearly I can see Lot Dodd and Bale clashing again in the future because, well, Lot Dodd said it, didn't he? You're playing a dangerous game. You know, he says it as he's walking away. So I think you're going to see those two going head-to-head a few times. So it's definitely set up a few little things there. I did enjoy it.
Right. Yeah, I think Bail Organa is I think he's one of my favorite characters as far as, you know, the political side of Star Wars. I like him a lot more than some of the other politicians like Mass Amita or Palpatine or whatever. Of course, he can probably be considered as a Sith. But, yeah, I always thought that he was great. Revenge of the Sith, I mean, he played a pretty prominent role as far as the story goes. Yeah. And I thought he works really well in Clone Wars in these, you know, political episodes. So, all right, well, I think that's going to wrap up our episode for this week. And Eric dropped off. How do we contact you, Mark?
You can contact me via the Jedi News website, or you can, if you want to send me an email, mark@jedinews.co.uk, if anybody wants any information about what we're doing. We're trying to filter down the way that we're getting the news out about the site, so as well as doing these podcasts, and thanks for inviting me on, I do appreciate it. We're going to try and get a monthly newsletter effectively going out from Jedi News, so there's stuff that the other guys are doing and the stuff that I'm doing, just to sort of make it a bit more linked up thinking, because obviously I've been running my own site for 10 years and I've got my ways of doing things and James has got his, so we need to work out how we're going to make it a bit more unified without stepping on each other's toes. So that's the best way. And I'm always on Facebook. My name on Facebook, Mark Lightsaber, so you might see me on there. And there's the Twitter feed, Jedi News 2010. So, I'm everywhere. You've only got to look outside. If there's a stamp that needs licking, I'll be the one doing it. So, I'm out there.
How do people get a hold of you, Aaron?
Mainly just Twitter. That's kind of my main activity, mostly what I do. Most of the stuff I post about Star Wars is all, you know, done through Twitter. So, it's @AVGoins, AVGoINS. So, yeah, that's the best way.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, guys. It was a lot of fun.
Pleasure.
Yeah, definitely. Right. Thanks for having me back.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you guys next. We'll talk to everybody next week. This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox. It's intended for informational and entertainment purposes only. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and character, or any other Star Wars-related items are the registered trademarks of Lucasfilm or their respective trademark or copyright holders. Yeah.